Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're here to share a lot of positive insights today. And I'm going to ask you throughout the hour to call in and share your points of view. We have a lot of very aware individuals who see the bigger picture. And I'd like to hear from you. 888-874-4888 is our number. I'm going to talk about the anthocyanins in strawberries and olive oil, the polyphenols, and what they do. And the common cold actually may give children immunity against COVID. And ozone pollution is linked with increased hospitalizations for cardiovascular disease, and depression is more than a mental disorder. We have all that right now. From the Center for Nutritional Research at the Illinois Institute for Technology, according to the American Diabetes Association, diabetes causes more deaths a year than breast cancer and AIDS combined. Food plays an important role in the life of a diabetic. And when you look at berries, including strawberries, and specifically strawberries, as one of the top 10 superfoods for diabetes, put it in your meal plan. It's very low in sugar. It's packed with vitamins, antioxidants, and dietary fiber. Now, this was all published in a new article in the Molecular Nutrition and Food Nutrition. It found that the antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanin, C-Y-A-N-I-N, rich strawberries may improve insulin sensitivity. And insulin resistance is a hallmark of metabolic syndrome and a risk factor for heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. Typically, after a meal, the pancreas produces an appropriate amount of insulin to usher glucose from the bloodstream into the cells. People with some form of insulin resistance have built up a tolerance to insulin, so the pancreas must churn out extra insulin to coax blood sugar into the cells. Over time, the process can lead to type 2 diabetes. Researchers observed the effect of anthocyanins, which you also get from grapes, on the postprandial insulin response in obese adults with insulin resistance. Now, I'll give you even a quicker example because I just counseled someone this morning, about an hour ago. And this is a person that's morbidly overweight who had diabetes, was on two medications for it, and even with the medications, the person could not get their fasting blood sugar. Fasting is when you wake up in the morning, you haven't eaten yet, and couldn't get it below 203. With no medications and just doing a healthy diet and then exercising after each meal or juice, came right down to 101 this morning. That's 102 point drop with no medications. Now, your average physician may not be aware of this because they have not been encouraged to use lifestyle modification as part of their healing modality. Most have not. They have very little of that in medical school, unfortunately. And the pressure is give a drug and suppress a symptom. In my world, it's not to suppress a symptom, it's to understand what caused the symptom. If you go to the cause of all of our problems, you're more likely to find the notion of Occam's razor. The 14th century person who was considered a deep thinker who said, look, if you want to solve a problem, use the razor, cut through the fat and get to the meat, meaning metaphorically that you're most likely to have a positive outcome with the most reasonable and simple solution. But here's what we do. We reverse that. We say something as simple as diet cannot possibly deal with something as complicated as over 100 plus cancers and all these biological processes. That's just not feasible. It has to be something as complicated as the disease. And hence we make our first mistake in life. We begin to look at how complex, convoluted, and almost impossible to fathom is the solution because it must match in the complexity of the problem. No. What if I told you that 90% of all the solutions I've helped people with in life, on all the issues they deal with, are simple. In fact, I always have a challenge. And try this out if you don't think that this is in your capabilities. Walk out to a large audience and tell the audience you'd like to hear the most challenging, difficult question that they've ever raised, one they've never had an answer to, one something that doesn't work. They've lived with it. They've sought counseling and help. No matter what the problem is, it's still there. And I'm saying I'm going to answer that question in 3 minutes. I've never not been able to answer that question my entire career in 3 minutes because I'm not trying to deal with the symptoms of a problem. I'm dealing with the underlying cause. That's where the light switch is. Imagine a light bulb is staying on and you can't sleep and you go up to turn it off and you unscrew the bulb and the bulb is at 500 degrees and suddenly you burn your hand. Now your whole emphasis is what kind of protection do I have to have on my hand to unscrew the light bulb? I simply go to the switch and turn it off. And we don't think that way. We're actually conditioned just the opposite. And that's why we have so many problems that are unresolved when most problems are easy to resolve. Simple, not complicated. But it scares us. But now here's this person who had a very high blood sugar, one that would cause a heart attack or stroke at any given second. You get a blood pressure of 222 over 200, you're dead. You're dead. You're not going to survive that. I don't care who you are. Now the person has completely normal blood pressure. She was on 3 medications, now no medications. So how's that possible? Because you don't look at the numbers. You look at what they're doing to cause those numbers. And guess what her doctor never once asked her? What are you doing? How much sodium are you having in? Turns out this person is eating about 8,000 milligrams of sodium a day. How much the body needs? 1/10 of that, 800. So wouldn't it be simple to simply stop the sodium coming in? Person has a irregular heartbeat. This is interesting. I did a series of studies going back to the mid-1970s, Dr. Donald Mullen at the Albert Ellis Center, Dr. Lane Kahn, one of the most outstanding psychologists in New York, Dr. Alan Putterman, the psychiatrist. There were about 9 people, all MDs or PhDs, and they were a part of the study. And I said that it's the energy that a person manifests through their unconscious and conscious thoughts that can change the whole biochemistry of the body. And they said, that's nonsense. And I said, well, let's put it to test. We did a test. And the test was simple. You hook a person up, you got an EKG on them, you got their blood pressure monitored, but everyone's in another room. It's all done electronically. They're in a room, very pleasant room, and they're just sitting there. But then they're given a series of cards. And on the cards are some statements. Some of these statements are triggering their thoughts. Hence, they're going to have a reaction. And I said, you can cause high blood pressure. You can cause an irregular heartbeat for them to go into AFib or tachycardia by simply being stressed. Where before they had no AFib. And they said, well, that's not possible. I said, good, let's put it to test. And that's what science is about. And without exception, each one of the persons who were reading the cards sitting there, boom, up goes the heartbeat, irregular heartbeats. So, and everything else that we said would happen, and they didn't believe it, was shown to happen. A thought. And where do you get most of your thoughts? From your childhood. And what are most of those thoughts? You've forgotten them. Who remembers? And yet those, when you cannot intellectualize, and hence you cannot conceptualize the real meaning and purpose and context of what's being said and why, you take it as a truth. You absorb it. Just imagine how many parents, one or both, yell at each other. What do you think is going to be a person's conception of a relationship and healthy love? Yelling and controlling. Why? Because that's what they grew up thinking was the right way to love. And yet that's all epigenetically now hardwired into their DNA. So if you treat someone in a different way, with kindness and gentleness, they don't perceive that as love. Hard to imagine that, right? But that's the way our body works. like it or not. And I spent my entire adult career as a 36-year senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology in public health science, all the sciences. So this is something I did constantly. I would take a theory, a hypothesis, and challenge it to see was I right or wrong, and then let others do the same thing based upon the results I got to see if they duplicated them. That's science. You debate the issue. That's science. What we're not dealing with today is why people are making choices that cause them to make unhealthy lifestyles as the outcome. And then we're not willing to go there because of our wokeness, which is really a devastating negative consequence. So here's the takeaway message. So please, everyone in this audience, listen carefully. When you get stressed, a whole series of cascading hormones are released. Adrenaline, catecholamines, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and many more. These are meant to help protect you for about a minute to 3 minutes max. These are your fight or flight hormones. As a result, you get stressed about something and you start replaying it over and over in your mind. Every time you think about something that you did not control the outcome and you felt victimized by, you lay down another so-called reality. By the age of 30, you could have 50 million of these memories because you've recycled them so many times. I'm a victim. So then your reality is, my perception is that I was victimized. What's the outcome? Well, I'm a victim. What do you think the outcome is, Gary? Okay, we're all victimized at different points in life for different reasons, by different circumstances, some in our control, some out of our control. So what is the lesson you learn from this? Why do I need to know that? So it doesn't happen again. So you can see it coming. So you can say no to what might otherwise allow you to say yes. Who you vote for, the foods you eat, how you speak to the people in your life. Are you thoughtful, the words you use, or do you weaponize them to give them a particular sting? And we don't think about this. And then later when we realize, well, I shouldn't have said that, or I said it in the wrong way, I apologize. The apology doesn't mean diddly squat. So stop apologizing because it's worthless. It really is. Everybody apologizes and then repeats the same damn thing ad nauseum. If there's a consequence to making that mistake, then you learn from it. If there's no consequence, there's nothing learned. I was just thinking about this morning when I was thinking of how vulgar, how degrading, how debasement of the human spirit when you engage in this new reality show of slapping one another. Your intent is to hurt another human being with an open hand. Concussions, you can cause a stroke when you hit a person in the brain. You can cause an embolism. You can cause deafness. You can dislocate their jaw, their teeth. You can cause all forms of problems. And yet we're now rewarding that. We're regaling that as if this is the newest fashion. And it should be condemned. Because do you remember when you were growing up? This is a connected aside because it connects with everything else in life. If you pull back, if you're no longer a member of a tribe, and you pull back so you can see the tribes, including the one you were part of, then you suddenly have that kind of embarrassing, almost self-humiliation moment of, God, how stupid could I have been? But we all go through that. I hope we all go through it. So we no longer make the same mistakes. We'll make other mistakes. That's part of life. We won't make the same mistakes. And yet, think about when you were growing up. Did your parents or grandparents, aunts or uncles teach you morals? The value of respect for other people? Did they teach you not to steal or get in trouble? I'm sure they did, because they were the greatest generation and they lived through suffering. They had to have something stronger than the conditions they were in order to survive. And therefore, they had an abundance of optimism, even during the Great Depression, even during World War II, even when things were the bleakest. I remember getting out of a theater. I was 12 years old. My brother was 17, and he had a car, a convertible, and it was right in front of the Avery Theater on Broadway, or on Market Street, my hometown, the main street, and the center of that street. A Saturday afternoon, double feature. We came back out, got in the car, and I noticed my brother's wallet with money shown was right on the dashboard with the top down. Anybody could have taken it, and almost everyone would have seen it. Why didn't they? It wasn't a fear of going to jail. It was knowing that if you did that, what else would you be willing to do that was against your moral teachings? Because once you open a door to deception, then everything that you had previously been given as a guidance in life, you've lost that trust. And when you don't trust yourself, you don't trust anyone else. And there's where the addictive behaviors come in. The lying, the deception. Tell my story because I'm the victim instead of victimizing. So the people who could rob didn't. The people who could have taken advantage didn't, because their morals, their religious values, their family input allowed them to have what we call character. Now, I'm surprised the woke generation hasn't decided to eliminate, along with woman, they want woman out of the dictionaries, man out of the dictionaries, brothers, sisters out of the dictionaries, husband, wife out of the dictionaries, aunts and uncles out of the dictionaries, because it offends them. And these are people who have contributed nothing to society and won't accept something negative to challenge those who have these values and have lived by them, and cultures have lived by them, ethnicities live by them for the millennia. And yet it's not good enough. It's to be erased tomorrow by 5 o'clock, or we're going to have a law, and we've got people in Congress, people in the government, and academics who are going to come in and justify that whatever we want to do, no matter how horrendous it is, will be acceptable. That means you can lie with impunity. You can commit crimes against humanity with impunity. You can be indifferent to all suffering, local, domestic, worldwide, with impunity. You don't have to care about anyone but yourself, because that's the world you live in. A self-absorbed collective of narcissists. None strong, none deep, none able to change the world for the better, but making sure that the world they want, one that they're entitled to, is all that matters. That's where we live in today. Let's be clear on that. So how likely it is that a person who wants everything their way is going to choose a healthy lifestyle, a healthy respect for other people of other cultures, other ethnicities, other economic and class standings? They won't. They become monotheistically embracing their own tribe. So when you talk about having a healthier diet, a healthier body image, a healthier approach to it, you got to have a person who has a healthy attitude towards life and whose perception can be changed if the reality that that perception has created itself should be deconstructed. And what we all should be doing is taking a moment to see what within our belief systems, our values, our rituals every day should be at this point let go of, and something else and better taking its place. Life is a series of transitions. We're fortunate and blessed to have certain people in our life at some point, and hopefully even later, but not always. So then we appreciate those people and the time we spent, and now open ourselves up to the next transition in life. Because no one's going to get through all of this in one transition, and we're not prepared for what happens when something occurs that's outside of our control. I'm just suggesting this because how did I help a person in their blood sugar go to almost normal within 1 month with no drugs, and blood pressure that is normal with 3 drugs gone in just 1 month? Not one word dealt with the blood pressure. Not one word dealt with the blood sugar. Every word dealt with what is your value? What is your perception of yourself? What do you feel you can do? How do you look at a problem for solutions, or do you look at a problem to justify your pain, anguish, and victimization? When you make that shift in your perception, I'm no longer a victim, I'm my own person, I've learned lessons from being a victim, and now I'm going to be in control of my life, suddenly your reality changes, and that's when the healing begins. Just want to share that with you. Now, going on, we have another study from Anglia Ruskin University in the United Kingdom, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients about olive oil, There are hundreds of good articles on olive oil because it's quite simply olives and olive oil are just magnificent. The darker you get it, the healthier it is, the less likely it is to be a ripoff coming out of both Spain, Greece, and Italy, where the organized crime has been giving people sunflower oil or cottonseed oil and just a little bit of olive oil in there and charging higher prices. And it pays off for them, doesn't pay off for us. So buy something that has been independently tested. Check the company. Say, can you show me an assay that your product is pure, virgin, extra potent olive oil? And if they can't, don't buy it. If they can, that little extra effort you made means you're getting something really healing into your body. Now, why? Because olive oil polyphenols show that you're going to have better opportunity at exercising. You're going to be able to perform better. You're going to have more energy. And that's because of the olive oil. This has been tested. Yeah. We know the polyphenols, like those found in beets, those found in pomegranates and cherries, are terrific because they create nitric oxide, which opens it's a vasoexpander. It opens your veins, allowing blood to flow more freely, thinning out the blood, less clots, and a likelihood of a clot, and your extremities. And for men, especially men who've ridden bikes, you may not be aware of it, but when you're sitting in one of those stupid little skinny seats, I don't have that seat. I told the guy at the bike store, what's your biggest seat? And he showed me, I said, that's not big enough. And he said, well, you know, what do you want it for? I said, because when I'm riding, I don't want the veins, my reproductive veins that I'm sitting on, to be crunched down and collapse, because you keep doing that, you're not going to be able to get that blood flow into where you want it when you want it. How about that for simplicity? And he just kind of shook his head and rolled his eyes like, oh, another nut job. No one who doesn't have to worry about where my blood's flowing. A lot of people do. So you want good blood flow. You want healthy blood flow. The beets give it to you. Cherries give it to you. But also, and a lot of people are not aware of this, olives give it to you, and olive oil. All right? Just want to share that. That's a good study. You don't need a lot of olive oil. I'd say 2 tablespoons a day. Now, from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and the University of Bern, which is in Switzerland, and the University of Oslo, which is Norway, they all came up with the same study. The common cold gives children immunity against COVID-19. Listen again what I just said. There's two ways of approaching this. You can vaccinate your children. You can vaccinate your children every hour if you're really that fanatic. And some people would think, I'm for Fauci, and I've got those people emailing me hate letters. That's fine. You're the one whose adrenaline is secreting heavily, not mine, because you're not on the right side of this issue. In fact, very few people have been. But when a child gets a cold and the virus, rhinovirus, whatever virus they're getting, that actually stimulates the immune system, and that immune system can help you against COVID, and providing by memory T cells generated by the common cold, versus a vaccine where there is not a single scientific study in the world that I have reviewed, and I've reviewed a lot of them, that shows you that children are protected by the COVID vaccine, teenagers, athletes. None of that is true. None of those people can justify. Now, you have freedom of choice, so I believe in freedom of choice for adults, not children. And yet right now, they're making efforts in Canada to have children vaccinated against COVID, a worthless and dangerous vaccine, even though there's no science whatsoever showing it benefits them, and a lot of science showing that it harms them. And that's even when a child has natural immunity. Remember, I was the first radio show in the United States, the very first one, who told you, if you get COVID and you're healthy, good for you, because you have natural immunity. And by the way, that natural immunity is still in effect, because they're still finding natural antibody activity better than a vaccine with no side effects. All right? You don't have those self-regulating nanolipids clogging your arteries that upwards of 20%, estimated 20% of people got the vaccine have, which will cause stroke and heart attacks and death. Look at the numbers. if the scientific study showing the degree to which those lipid particles are creating the blockages in your veins and arteries that the morticians showed us first, and then the pathologist confirmed that. They had a whole conference. I broadcast some of the conference just about a year ago, a little less, about 9 months ago, in Europe, in Geneva, and not a single word about this anywhere to this date in the mainstream media. But if you take how many people were vaccinated, you take 20% of them are going to have adverse effects. You're dealing in the worst crisis in medical history, worse than the bubonic plague, and not a word in the media about it. So I'm just giving you a heads up, all right, on think twice before you vaccinate your child. And by the way, the paper was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, so it's not conspiracy theory. Also, if you live in a country where there's heavy air pollution, understand, according to the European Heart Journal, you're increasing your risk of hospitalizations for cardiovascular disease and death. That's one of those ideas of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. You don't want to be there, because an awful lot of hospitalizations, 6,444,441 hospital admissions for cardiovascular disease in 70 cities where they had 8 hours of maximum ozone concentration. So you got to be aware of the air. And by the way, from the University of Granada comes a study about depression is more than mental disorder. It affects the whole body. You can't just have an emotional problem. And the people thought, yeah, I can. No, you can't. There's no such thing as just an emotional problem. It does not exist in science. What you will have is you'll have the emotions which you believe are real, which more often than not are not. But every single cell in your body is going to be adversely affected, because now you're affecting those hormones once again, your heartbeat, the electrical charges to the heart are different when you're under stress, because once again, you're under fight or flight, and the heart has to beat fast and hard. If it's not used to doing that, you're suddenly going to have an irregular heartbeat. So ask some people who have AFib, start looking at things differently. Stop getting into arguments. Stop raising your voice. Stop feeling pain and angst and existential threats. Simply say, I'm okay. Just calm myself. Just be calm. And when you focus upon being calm, you bring your blood pressure down. You bring your heart rate down. And I've seen people re-regulate their heart with AFib. Just let you know, what you think will directly impact your heart. And you can test this out on yourself. After an argument, immediately after or during, take your pulse, take your blood pressure, and see what it is. See if your pulse is even. This is why we're a nation of anger. Legitimate anger in many cases, outrage at what we see and what we experience, and what we're confronted with. But you've got to take a different emotional approach to it. Don't let yourself become a part of the problem you're facing. Look for solutions, because otherwise that anger could result in a stroke. That anger could result in AFib, and you're not even knowing it. All right, and last thing here is that they're now seeing an article published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry on a significant association with people who are depressed and cardiovascular disease and cancer, because you're creating massive inflammation, massive, when you're angry or stressed, both of which could end up killing you. And by the way, grapeseed extract protects against damaging effects of chemo while boosting its effectiveness, University of Adelaide, published in PLOS One. That's all the time we have for health and nutrition. We're at halfway through our program, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I've got a lot of interesting things to share with you. And we try to select stuff every day that you haven't heard before. And by the way, if you didn't hear that exclusive interview last night, you missed something, go to the archives and download it, because it is terrific. You can call in. By the way, we're reigniting our app for PRN.live. So if any cell phone, you just hit the app and you'll immediately be connected. We're doing that as we speak today. But in the interim, you can call our archive number at 631-359-9463, 631-359-9463. And you can always go to prn.live, scroll down to where you see the show notes, and then today's date, and you'll see the clips I'm about to share with you in real time. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. For the next month, you'll be hearing music to feel good about from the 1950s and 60s. On our environmental segment, it's short but to the point. Do you remember when I said there are certain places in America you should reconsider living there if it's not sustainable for the future? Maybe all right today, may have been perfect before then, but almost half of America is no longer sustainable. And it's not that you have to move instantly, but if you're in California and you just see these gigantic amounts of rain coming, wiping out roads and bridges and killing people and destroying homes, water damage where people don't have insurance for water damage, they're going to lose their home. This is a big deal. The question is, will anybody change? I don't know. I hope so, because I'm not going to stay in a place that is not sustainable. Well, I went out to the beach with my cinematographer, Roland Marconi. We've been working together for 35 years. You'll see his name on the different films. And my latest film, by the way, is in post-production, and it's being edited in New York at our studio. And Val says it should be ready within 4 weeks, and I'll be coming right up to New York and premiering it, lecturing on doing a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. It's really hard-hitting. Whoa. It is, well, a question of all the hard-hitting films I've done, like Poverty, Inc., and War on Health, and Prescription for Disaster, and this is the hardest hitting film I've ever done, but could have the most benefit to the most people. Anyhow, enough on that. But we were at the beach filming, and I noticed that here, and even as the city had come in and scooped up tons and tons of dead fish, millions of dead fish, and the red tide, which is toxic to fish and humans, was about, I would say, 100 yards out into the ocean, into the Gulf. That wasn't good. So here are all these multi-million dollar buildings, gigantic buildings up and down in the richest part of Florida, is not West Palm Beach. It is over the last piece of land before you hit the Everglades. There's nothing beyond that. No roads, nobody goes. And it's called Port Royal. And those are some of the most beautiful homes in America, right on the beach. And all that's up on the beach. The trouble is the air is extremely toxic. And it can hurt you. And the different types of bacteria, flesh-eating bacteria, from just walking on the sand, not in the water. Going in the water would be insane. And even Port Royal, one of the most coveted small, it's small. You can drive from one end of Port Royal to the other in 5 minutes. It's very small, but it's got all these canals. It's all canals, little houses on the canal. And it was the go-to place, not now. Those canals are loaded with this red algae. Guess how far out the red tide goes now? 40 miles. Not 40 feet, 40 miles. Quote, big stinky blob of algae takes aim at Florida beaches. What's causing it? Is it the climate change? A 5,000-mile swath of a smelly seaweed called Sargassum could soon blanket beaches in Florida and the Caribbean. What's going on? Well, that's what happens when too much fertilizer, synthetic fertilizer with nitrogen, gets into the water. So take it back to its cause, industrial farming. What doesn't cause it? Organic farming, French intensive farming, raised bed farming, hydroponic farming doesn't cause it. Commercial farming does. that they will only focus upon how bad it is on the beaches and how that is affecting all the people who live in these multi-million dollar and thousands of thousands go clear up and on both coasts. And those people have to keep their windows closed. And if the air condition's on, that means bringing air in. And that's not healthy. And that's not going to weigh. That's only going to increase. Just letting you know. I'm not near the beach. I'm way off the beach. So that doesn't impact me. But it's impacting other people, which one of the reasons I chose not to be in the beach. I'm in the boonies. I'm way out here on a ranch. So just remember, don't listen to the broker. They're going to tell you what they need to say. So you're going to buy so they can make their commission. No. So I want to thank Sharon Willems, a citizen journalist from West Virginia, who's out there every day sending out information to people. And we have a lot of citizen journalists. And the one who actually won an award and a $1,000 prize last year is out there sending out little clips every day. And so we pass these on to you. Now, here's a story before we get to one of the clips that is not being discussed, but it's I think it's very important. And this is about the advertisement you see all the time on television, Medicare Plus Advantage. Well, that's not very good. Why? Because what's guiding a lot of the outcomes? Artificial intelligence. This is a stat investigation from the stat website, good people doing good work. Quote, denied by artificial intelligence how Medicare Advantage plans use algorithms to cut off care for seniors in need. I'm going to read this one paragraph. An algorithm, not a doctor, predicted a rapid recovery for Frances Walter, an 85-year-old Wisconsin woman with a shattered left shoulder and an allergy to pain medicine. In 16.6 days exactly, she would be ready to leave her nursing home. On the 17th day, her Medicaid Advantage Insurer Security Health Plan followed the algorithm and cut off all payments to her for her care, concluding that she was ready to return to her apartment where she lived alone. Meanwhile, medical notes in June, a month later, showed Walter's pain was maxing out the scales, and that she could not dress herself, she could not go to the bathroom, she couldn't even push a walker without help. It would take more than a year for a federal judge to conclude the insurer's decision was, quote, at best speculative, and that Walters was owed thousands of dollars for more than 3 weeks of treatment. While she fought the denial, she had to spend down her life savings and enroll in Medicaid just to progress. Health insurance companies have rejected medical claims for as long as they've been around, but a stat investigation found artificial intelligence is now driving their denials to new heights in Medicare Advantage, the taxpayer-funded alternative to traditional Medicare that covers more than 31 million Americans. Behind the scenes, insurers are using unregulated predictive algorithms under the guise of scientific rigor to pinpoint the precise moment when they could cut off payments for an older patient's treatment, and that is going nationwide. You didn't know it? Now you do. So I wouldn't get in that program, but more importantly, that's one of the ways they're using the algorithms in the wrong way. And also, I want to thank Sharon Willems for sending us that as well. And also, there's an information going around that talks about, did remdesivir kill 100,000 Americans? That was the primary treatment that was given. And that is something that we should be paying attention to. Now, who gave us remdesivir? Dr. Fauci. Who said it would be the only one that would be allowed? And no other medications that actually worked? Fauci. And was there scientific studies to show that it was safe and effective? No. And where did it come from? It was treating some small number of patients in Africa for Ebola virus, and 54 those 54% of the patients died. So why would you allow a very expensive drug that has not had proper clinical trials to be rushed in to give to some of the most sick people? And it's asking this question from Natural Blaze from Nian Pain. Did Fauci's remdesivir kill 100,000 Americans? And now there are lawsuits against the makers of remdesivir, but there's a connection between Gilead and the National Institute of Health support for remdesivir. I'm going to bring the guests on. And why? Because it was $3,120 per dose for this. Well, how much is ivermectin? Oh, it's about $10. And hydroxychloroquine, more or less the same. And vitamin C and D and zinc. And how about monoclonal antibodies? All those are inexpensive, and they're safe, proven safe, and effective. Remdesivir, not effective, and deadly. So now, a little karma's catching up, just want to let you know. So if you've had a loved one who died, who received remdesivir, go online and join the class action lawsuits. I'll be dealing with this and the authors in an upcoming interview. Oh, and by the way, good news given to us by Dr. Robert Malone in Germany. A Dr. Brian Brittle is the PhD virologist, vaccinologist who first discovered and then revealed the Pfizer, quote, common technical documents from Japan, which alerted many to the huge deficiencies and red flags which existed in the BioNTech Pfizer SARS-2 non-clinical data package. And he also endured enormous censorship and academic harassment. But guess what? As of today, quote, admits severe, Minister of Health of Germany, admits severe COVID vaccine injuries have always exceeded what Canada deemed to be program ending. And this is by Dr. Byron Brittle. And it goes into how Karl Lauterbach is Germany's Federal Ministry of Health. Yesterday, he dropped a bombshell on Germans in an interview. It has been posted on YouTube with English subtitles. And, you know, it goes into about now they're recognizing all that damage. Before they denied it, more countries are going to come forward and do the same. Who was one of the very first people to speak out against what was happening with COVID? It was a person, he was a PhD, he was on Pfizer's payroll as one of its chief scientists for 17 years, went to all the right schools, had all the right degrees, never had a controversy in his career, published a lot of articles, was one of the sought-after immunologists and vaccinologists in the world, Dr. Michael Yeadon. And he was quickly, when he started to make some concerned observations, he was deplatformed. Here, clip number two, Dr. Michael Yeadon. We're going to play it right now. Short, it's only 60 seconds. Well, he has been proven right about every single thing he said. Listen to what he has to say now.
If I just make three quick points. The first is we've been lied to by government officials and corporate types about absolutely everything to do with this so-called virus pandemic, the severity of the public health threat, the necessity to lock down asymptomatic transmission, the use of masks, mass testing, and finally, vaccines. Every single part of the narrative, every single part is a lie, scientifically proven. And I know that the people like Fauci, like Sir Patrick Vallance, were lying through the TVs to the audience because we share a common training. I trained at the same kind of universities at the same time. That meant we had the same foundational training, for example, in immunology. And then when they said things I knew were not true, I knew that they knew that too, and that they were lying to you. And that was what kickstarted me from very early on. So basically, they're not frightened of people like me because they figure that I won't be heard. So here's the thing. Please, listener, what I ask you to do is memorize two or three of the most powerful things I told you. You must go and tell 10 other people. But please don't tell me it's hard. I know it's hard. I've been trying to do this for almost 3 years. But the only way we'll win is if you tell 10 other people. The mass media is never going to tell them, right?
He is right. If you hear something on this program, if you see an article, if you watch a video clip and you feel that it's reasonable and responsible, then share it. We do no advertising. We are not out there. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. I gave up Facebook years ago. I had almost 8 million people following me that day when I quit because I didn't want to be a part of that. So share this information with others, please. Now, some people are out there and they put themselves between the enemy and you, and they deserve support. One of those individuals is Jimmy Dore. He went on Tucker Carlson to talk about the bombing of the pipeline, Nord Stream pipeline, which America did. Seymour Hersh detailed it in great specific analysis. And what happened to him because he did that? Here's Jimmy Dore explaining the pushback that came to him because he told the truth, the smears against him, trying to get him thrown off the air. All right? It's a short clip, worth hearing.
So it seems obvious the Biden people did it, but in doing it, they not only caused this massive environmental catastrophe, but they also shafted their so-called NATO allies. Why does no one seem to care about this?
Well, Americans people forget what happened is Americans are the most propagandized people in the world, right?
Yes, that's
and they
true.
Don't even know what's happening with the Nord Stream pipeline. They think that propaganda happens to other people. So this is 100% propaganda war. And why doesn't Joe Biden want to investigate this? Why doesn't Congress want to investigate this? If they investigate it, they'll know it'll show that the United States didn't do it and Russia did it. So why don't they want to investigate it? Sweden, Denmark, and Norway already did their own investigation of this. They won't release it. Why won't they release this investigations? Just like they don't want to investigate the cause of the coronavirus outbreak, they don't want to know the answers. They don't want to investigate them because they already know the answers. You know, America is turned into, Chris Hedges has called America a mafia state. A tiny cabal of people have control of our government, and they're using it to do war for economic profit. You know, the difference between our mafia state now back then, the mafia helped defeat the Nazis back then. Now we're actually arming Nazis. You know, and isn't it just like America to ignore the Nazis that are suffering here at home trying to buy eggs while we fund Nazis in other countries? It's unbelievable what's happening. This is really about World War III. And why aren't they investigating it? No, now they won't even ask them a question. You know, Cy Hirsch's article came out detailing how they all blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. And the American press won't even ask the people he named in that article a question about it. They won't ask Victoria Nuland. They won't ask Jess Sullivan. They won't ask Anthony Blinken. In fact, those people won't even give a statement about it. You know who will talk about it? Kirby, the press secretary at the White House. Because I'm sure the people who did the investigations have a pipeline right to Kirby, but not to Anthony Blinken, not to Sullivan, not Victoria Nuland. By the way, these are the same people who lied us into the Iraq war, lied to us about Libya, lied to us about Syria, dropped so many bombs in Syria they ran out of bombs. They're doing the same thing. America is the world's terrorist. We have 400 military bases surrounding China. We provoke this by people don't know that the CIA got in bed with the right-wing Nazis in Ukraine to overthrow the democratically elected government of Ukraine in 2014. We had a peace deal. It was called the Minsk Accord. And then they violated. Who violated it? Ukraine kept shelling the Donbass, which are the Russian speakers in the eastern part of the Ukraine. And that's why Putin had to be provoked to invade to protect those people. Nobody will tell you that. Everybody who talks about every other news station, by the way, you're the only one doing this. And I applaud you for letting people come out and tell the truth about what's actually happening in Ukraine. Other stations, when I watch, what they do is they start the history of Ukraine from Putin's invasion. They never tell you that we overthrew their democratically elected government in 2014. They never tell you that they didn't stop shelling the people in the Donbass. They never abided by the Minsk Accord. They don't tell you that the former German prime minister said that the reason why they did the Minsk Accords in the first place was so that Ukraine could build up their military to get ready for this war that they're provoking. So the American people are waking up. There was a big... Okay. Anyway, yeah. I'll leave it there.
Good for you, Jimmy Dore. Tucker is not the only person that, the only platform that brings people on to share their insights. We do that all the time. In fact, before any of the other people do. But I appreciate his position on that. He's risking a lot. But one person is Michael Schellenberger, S-H-E-L-L-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. He's a really good journalist. And he was one of the people who was given, he didn't ask for it, he was given the Twitter files. He was not told what to do. He was simply say, go through these, and is there any censorship? And he found, along with Matt Taibbi, a lot of censorship. So what he is saying here in his opening to Congress in a short clip, he's saying that there is a military intelligence and corporate industrial complex that virtually controls all of the media platforms, and that this has all been hidden until now. And if you even suggested this, you were a conspiracy theorist. But now, everything, including the everything on Twitter that would in any way support the government's position was allowed. Anything that challenged it on any issue was immediately rejected. And this was sought after constantly by the CIA, by the FBI. So why in the world would anyone trust the CIA and the FBI? And yet, to their shame, the Democrats, being extremely partisan, who should have and historically did support, as at least from the mid-1960s till now, before that, remember, they created the Ku Klux Klan. What a rotten group back in the 1800s. But be that as it may, he's telling you the truth. And they were attacking him and saying, you're a so-called journalist, you and Matt Taibbi. Yeah, they got more awards than almost any other journalist. Yeah, they're the real McCoy. And the Democrats on there are just showing the worst that they could be in their partisan politics. Now to the clip of censoring the censorship of the industrial complex. We're all impacted by this. So please, all of us, pay attention. And BAI, you'll have to stop in 2 minutes to go to your news, but we're going to continue on uninterrupted from here.
You want to go with Mr. Schellenberger? We can go with Mr. Schellenberger. We'll start with Mr. Schellenberger. You understand how it works. You get 5 minutes. Make sure you hit the microphone so we can all hear. When it gets to yellow, it means just like you would expect, time to start winding up. And when it gets to red, it's time to stop. But we'll be a little bit leaning on the time. Mr. Schellenberger, you are recognized for your opening statement.
Chairman Jordan, Ranking Member Plaskett, members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting my testimony. In his 1961 farewell address, President Dwight Eisenhower warned of, quote, the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower feared that the size and power of the complex, or cluster, of government contractors and the Defense Department would, quote, endanger our liberties or democratic processes. How did he mean that? Through, quote, domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money. He feared public policy would become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. Eisenhower's fears were well-founded. Today, American taxpayers are unwittingly financing the growth and power of a censorship industrial complex run by America's scientific and technological elite, which endangers our liberties and democracy. I'm grateful for this opportunity to offer this testimony and sound the alarm over the shocking and disturbing emergence of state-sponsored censorship in the United States of America. The Twitter files, state attorneys general lawsuits, and investigative reporters have revealed a large and growing network of government agencies, academic institutions, and non-governmental organizations that are actively censoring American citizens, often without their knowledge, on a range of issues. I do not know how much of the censorship is coordinated beyond what we have been able to document, and I will not speculate. I recognize that the law allows Facebook, Twitter, and other private companies to moderate content on their platforms, and I support the right of governments to communicate with the public, including to dispute inaccurate information. But government officials have been caught repeatedly pushing social media platforms to censor disfavored users and content. Often these acts of censorship threaten the legal protection social media companies need to exist, Section 230. If government officials are directing or facilitating such censorship, notes one law professor, it raises serious First Amendment questions It is axiomatic that the government cannot do indirectly what it is prohibited from doing directly. Moreover, we know that the U.S. government has funded organizations that pressure advertisers to boycott news media organizations and social media platforms that refuse to censor and/or spread disinformation, including alleged conspiracy theories. The Stanford Internet Observatory, the University of Washington, the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab, and Graphica have all inadequately disclosed ties to the Department of Defense, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies. They work with multiple U.S. government agencies to institutionalize censorship research and advocacy within dozens of other universities and think tanks. It is important to understand how these groups function. They are not publicly engaging with their opponents in an open exchange of ideas. They aren't asking for a national debate over the limits of the First Amendment. Rather, they are creating blacklists of disfavored people and then pressuring, cajoling, and demanding that social media platforms censor, deamplify, and even ban the people on those lists. The censorship industrial complex combines established methods of psychological manipulation, some developed by the U.S. military during the global war on terror, with highly sophisticated tools from computer science, including artificial intelligence. The complex's leaders are driven by the fear that the internet and social media platforms empower populist, alternative, and fringe personalities and views, which they regard as destabilizing. Federal government officials, agencies, and contractors have gone from fighting ISIS recruiters and Russian bots to censoring and deplatforming ordinary Americans and disfavored public figures. Importantly, the bar for bringing in military-grade government monitoring and speech countering techniques has moved from, quote, countering terrorism to, quote, countering extremism to countering simple misinformation, otherwise known as being wrong on the internet. The government no longer needs a predicate of calling you a terrorist or an extremist to deploy government resources to counter your political activity. The only predicate it needs is simply the assertion that the opinion you expressed on social media is wrong. These efforts extend to influencing and even directing conventional news media organizations. Since 1971, when the Washington Post and New York Times elected to publish classified Pentagon papers about the war in Vietnam, journalists have understood that we have a professional obligation to report on leaked documents whose contents are in the public interest. And yet in 2020, the Aspen Institute and Stanford Cyber Policy Center urged journalists to, quote, break the Pentagon Papers principle and not cover leaked information to prevent the spread of disinformation. Government-funded censors frequently invoke the prevention of real-world harm to justify their demands for censorship, but the censors define harm far more expansively than the Supreme Court does. Increasingly, the censors say their goal is to restrict information that delegitimizes governmental, industrial, and news media organizations. That mandate is so sweeping that it could easily censor criticism from any part of the status quo, from elected officials to institutions to laws. Congress should immediately cut off funding to the censors and investigate their activities. It should mandate instant reporting of all conversations between social media executives, government employees, and government contractors concerning content
coming
moderation.
Coming right down, Gary, right
and
now.
And finally, Congress should limit the broad permission given to social media platforms to censor.
Good for him. Good for both of those journalists risking their careers to tell the truth, that all of us have been lied to, that the government has been behind it, that the CIA, National Security Agency, the Homeland Security, all the major people involved could determine who would have a form and who would be attacked and disgraced. And that's been going on for a long time. Just want you to know. All right. And that's all independently validated from the actual documents. It's not hearsay. It's not conspiracy theory. We're out of time. Sorry, I can't take any calls today, but I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And go download the shows you hadn't heard, especially last night's show. It's really tough. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.